This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive, and I'm Brooke Spector, and every week at this time, we bring you a discussion with someone who is interesting in the world of ideas and thought and contemplation about the universe, whether it's on politics or international economics, or sometimes artistic endeavors and sometimes futurologists. We try to have a mix. And today I'm really pleased to have as our guest Neil Muyunga, who I first met when he was composing an opera. And he may remember that, The Flower of Shembe. But he's had an interesting career. He's a composer, a sound artist, and librettist, works in opera, jazz improv, and in Zulu and Sesotho, idiomatic song. And he lived and worked, obviously, in South Africa, but also in Italy and Germany, and he has recordings. And the stage productions include A Memory of How It Feels, The Flower of Shembe, which was done with Opera Africa, and The Heart of Redness, and one that I'm not sure I can pronounce, Mate DBA. I think that's right. He's been a composer in residence for the Johannesburg International Mozart Festival, the National Arts Festival in Makanda, and the Stellenbosch International Chamber Music Festival. This is a man whose talents are not limited to one specific area of endeavor. And now he is impresario for the Less Good Idea and creative director at the Center for the Less Good Idea. And I'll let him explain that, but let me simply say this institution is a creature of the ideas that came from renowned artist William Kentridge and Bronwyn Lace, and it's in Doornfontein, New Doornfontein, and it's taken over an old warehouse factory building and various venues are in it. And there's just one comment that I'll read from their material about it. And it says, the Center for the Less Good Idea is a physical and immaterial space to pursue incidental discoveries made in the process of producing work. Often you start with a good idea. It might seem crystal clear at first, but when you take it off the proverbial drawing board, cracks and fissures emerge in the surface and they cannot be ignored. It is in following the secondary ideas, those less good ideas, going to address the first idea that the center nurtures. That's a heck of an operating principle. Neil, it's really good to have you with us this morning, and thank you for joining.
Brooks, thank you so much for the invitation. It's great seeing you again and catching up.
Now tell me what your idea of the Center for the Less Good Idea. It's in a fairly unpromising part of Johannesburg. A lot of people think of the downtown as a no-go area. There's a sign over Empire Road that says, abandon hope, all ye who enter here. Well, I'm stealing that from Virgil, I guess, but it isn't. I've been there a few times. During COVID, it was harder, obviously. But how do you see this place, and what brought you to it? I mean, did they corner you and make you an offer you couldn't turn down, or did you have to beg them to let you do it, or was it a delicate dance between the two sides over a two-year period? How did you get here?
Well, I mean, I think it's a very interesting journey. You know, William is a friend, and he's somebody I've enjoyed working with, and we did quite a lot of projects together about 10 years ago. And for me, it was really such an enjoyable moment to share procedures, to share methodologies. And what I realized is this is a person who works at a very high level, but is constantly wanting to dig deeper. So not interested so much in the first instance of an idea or of a work, but is always interested in how that idea can be deepened. Where we find, you know, what Einstein used to call elegance, which is proceeding from the simple idea to the complexity, moving beyond complexity towards elegance, which is what I'm very interested in. It's about how ideas can hold multiple meanings, how they can be multimodal, and how they can allow for different points of entry and exit. So that's how I read the project of the center, and it's really how I also read the work. The way it happened really is they put out a call for an impresario And then they reached out to me and said, actually, you are the person we want to consider this. And I think it's because we've been having a conversation about the kind of work I'm interested in doing and the kind of work they want to front and what they want to support. What excites me about the center is it's really not a venue. It's not a place that receives work that is finished, that is ready for an audience. Incubator space, which means it platforms itself as a place where artists, makers, thinkers, people who are seeking the better question can find each other and experiment and explore. And it's without bounds. And it's about finding the depth of the ideas that we have. We follow hunches, we follow inclinations. And for me, that's exciting because it's the way that I work. And so the prospect of working in a center that is well resourced, that does that for my own ideas, as well as the ideas of others who I have great respect for, was immediately appealing. So I accepted the invitation, and it's premised on the idea that I will be bringing new methodologies of working. Of course, the center has been in existence for seven very successful years. I've been watching the center from a distance as a fan and as an appreciator of the artists who've been invited and who've been hosted there. So I've seen the incredible kinds of work that have happened and the interesting ways in which artists have collaborated. So I guess my challenge is to find what in those strategies remains interesting to explore, and who in this very large community of artists, mainly based in Johannesburg, but also some who are from around the country, who of those people to enter into new forms of conversation. But what I'm also wanting to bring is a new way, a new style, a new methodology, as I said, of how to make. And so I've come up with a few ideas which I think could be iconic and which could lead to new ways of working. And I also want to bring a different network of people to collaborate with. I've been working a lot, as you mentioned, not only in different parts of Europe and the United States and Latin America, but also a lot of parts of Africa. And what I've discovered is many, many people are finding interesting, quite experimental ways of working, mainly because the resources are not always there, but people want to make work nonetheless. So I'm interested in projects that are happening, for example, in Senegal and in Egypt, particularly where these are the two spaces that I've developed very, very strong links.
When we talk about this kind of work, some people, some listeners will probably go, oh dear, avant-garde work. This is obscure, abstract, impossible for normal people to get their hands around. Help me dispel that idea that this is only for those people who have advanced degrees in, I'm not quite sure what.
Well, firstly, let me say it's interesting to me not to be afraid of a challenging proposal, a challenging presentation. And it's one of the things that interests me. But I am also interested in how audiences can be allowed to feel welcome. So the idea of making it accessible is very, very important to me. And one of the key ways we do that at the center is to give people a sense of the process and procedures we use. So we expose moments of vulnerability in the making. We expose the back end of how we are making projects so that people can and are invited to invest in not just what is the final product. We're not so interested in what becomes the final glitzy, glamorous, fixed product, but it's about how we get to make ideas work and ideas that may not feel secure at the outset. And I think that, and a huge sensibility about the kinds of things that interests our population. So what happens on street level becomes one of the references that we assimilate. What happens people's TikToks, what happens on people's web feeds become interesting questions that we want to explore. But I guess the invitation is to explore them while also thinking about what different entry points and exit points we might have into those ideas, so that we're not leading them as categorical, superficial aberrations, but we develop them into things that speak to us. I mean, maybe let me give you an example.
Please, I was going to say, let's take this to the concrete and the real and tell me how this works.
Right. So one of the things I'm interested in, and as you mentioned, you know, the sign about fear you who enter hell or some such idea. Johannesburg has become the place that people describe, particularly downtown Johannesburg, as the center of urban decay. It feels like no lights are on, nobody's working, nobody's cleaning it, and nobody really, really cares about it. What I'm interested in is talking about when a place is like that and yet has meant so much to someone like me. I grew up in Soweto, and Johannesburg, downtown Joburg is my city, place that made me. And I have memories still about the green lawns that used to be at the library gardens. I used to have a very clear sense of the photographers that used to mill about near the Sun International Hotel, the very blue, long skyscraper that is at the end of Small Street. And people who would come, and people who would come there, usually newly married couples who'd come there for their photo sessions. So it was a glamorous part of town to parade, to enjoy a Saturday afternoon. And I wonder where that has gone. Of course, I have some ideas, and many of us know where that has disappeared to. But in the process of disappearing and in the process of reaching the bottom of the barrel, the question for me that occurs is, what is around the corner? What are the new possibilities? Because people still live and work and operate in downtown Johannesburg. You mentioned—
I'm going to have to take a quick station break. This is Brooke Spector with The Deep Dive, and today's guest, really pleased to have Nia Muyanga, who is the impresario and creative director at the Center for the Less Good Idea in downtown Johannesburg in Doornfontein, that has been significantly supported by local artist of global acclaim, William Kentridge. And we'll be right back after this message.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, and my guest this morning, Nia Muyanga, composer, creative figure of international reputation, and now the creative director of the Center for the Less Good Idea, creative director for Less Good Ideas at the Center for the Less Good Idea, where he is supposed to make something happen. And you were just in the process of describing how that's going to be translated into reality, the old city giving way to the new version of Johannesburg. And I'll let you pick up from there.
Yes. So what I was saying is, I'm interested in what happens at the turning point where a city has become so damaged, so neglected, that the only thing that could likely happen next is an upswing, an upturn. And Brooks, you ask me what those things are that are happening on the margins that are unexpected, that possibly are exciting. My honest answer is, I don't know. So the project is to find out what people know is happening. And the way that I'm doing that, and this is one example of one of the ideas that I'm putting forward, is to invite people who think about the urban landscape, Johannesburg, but also other cities in the global south, to write a text that speaks about where they've seen the unexpected play out. But that text should be in the form of a radio play. The idea is to mount these radio plays interpreted by live performers. So it will be a cohort of music performers, sound performers, Foley artists, if you will, designers, movement specialists, dancers, lighting specialists, sound engineers, sound makers, sound designers. And it's about finding a way to describe what they determine is the unexpected that's happening right beneath our noses. And it's also about investigating different ways of seeing. And some people who I've invited may choose to interview people who live and operate in downtown. Some people may choose to invent a utopia they propose. Some people may choose to make a kind of documentary piece that we then interpret in sonic form. And we're calling this a series of visual audio plays. And it's inspired by the old idea of the radio play. They were very popular in the 1950s in South Africa. And essentially, the radio play is a very interesting object that allows you to imagine what's happening in your mind. So your spirit is invested in the drama that's unfolding, except it's only happening in your imagination, because all you're hearing are verbal cues, verbal sounds. But I'm interested in how that can happen on stage. I'm interested in how that can also be articulated, because we've become an incredibly visual culture. how you articulate that for people who are seeing as well as imagining while hearing a different set of things.
In the old days, I mean, even before you and I were born, perhaps, although I'm older than you even, when radio plays and serials were broadcast in the U.S. and Britain, here too, I suspect, there were live audiences in the hall where a lot of it was done. And the audiences were encouraged to, there were signs, laugh now, or, you know, applaud or hoot or, or something. And that was picked up by the microphones of the day in the program. Yeah. And it seems to me that it's a great shame that that medium has melted away to some degree. From what you describe, I started to have a mental picture of radio versions of Afrofuturism flowers poking up from among the rubble.
That's exactly the things I'm hoping for. And I'm hoping that those images and those sounds, those ideas will tell us something we didn't expect about our city. And I think the birth of those ideas within us may bring forth a new city. You know, I've been hearing the story about the gentleman who on his own started regenerating the Wilds Park in Johannesburg.
That's a wonderful and true story.
And it's an incredible story and an inspiring story because it started from an idea that he had and it was a need. I heard that he was living in the area. I'm not sure if he still is, but the inspiration to make home, to make beauty in the place where he lived. And he took that upon himself. He didn't wait for funding. He didn't wait for the support of the local councillor. But in the process of making something, making it better each time, he was joined by other interested parties who were inspired by what they saw and what they envisioned could become. And today, the Wilds is once again a thriving. So I once knew the Wilds as a beautiful, thriving space to enjoy the natural environment. And this was in the 90s. And then it became a dark space, an abyss that people were afraid to visit because of muggings and because of a lack of security. And apparently now it's turned. In fact, I haven't been there recently. I need to go and visit it again. But the story itself inspires for me a curiosity about how one can do that for a street, for a set of shops, for a precinct. And I think it has to be possible. And I think it may begin with creative sparks that may invite others who are interested in resourcing it to take or to help it take shape. So for me, this process is about finding a creative response, but it's also about finding creative partners. So I'm also meeting the people who are in the area to find out what they think is happening and what they would like to see happen. And then we would like to imagine creative responses to what I find out. So I'm going to be on a fact-finding mission for the next couple of months. And that will lead to material.
Are you going to post guidelines on the internet or someplace where people can apply to bring forward ideas and projects, or are you going to let it flow organically from the people you have coffee with in the afternoons, or just how is this process going to work for somebody who is not already part of the Center for the Less Good Ideas community?
The way I'm starting is to approach the network of people who I think are thinking interesting things about African cities. And some of those people are in Johannesburg. And I'm approaching them to think with me about what questions are interesting to explore and to investigate. Some of them I'm approaching specifically to write up those texts that become the inspiration for the live interpretations. So it's about finding people who are invested in the idea of the city, who may have been critical about how the city has been allowed to take shape recently. But I'm also interested in people who live in other cities to tell us about how they have seen efforts of making the city more homely, more inviting. Maybe the city is too wide. I'm actually really thinking about the precinct. I'm thinking about those couple of streets. But I'm also talking to people who are in the adjacent areas to find out what they are doing. So some of the people that I'm interested in talking to are at the Constitution Hill. The people who run Flame Studios, who are friends, and they're doing very interesting things with their neighbors in that area around Kotze Street, that whole part of Braamfontein. And I think there's a potential there to do projects that speak to each other. We're not directly adjacent, but there is a channel of conversation that we started having. And the projects that they have on board are to do with students, young students who are at the Windybrow Center. but also people who are at the School of Art in Johannesburg in Bloemfontein, and then they are talking to young students at Wits University. And of course,
we have to take another station break. We're governed by all those rules and regulations. You know, if you're going to do radio programs, you have to have commercials. You have to have station IDs. And so we're going to take another one. And this is the Deep Dive. And I'm Brooke Spector. And my guest today is Neo Muyanga, the creative impresario for really interesting ideas at the Center for the Less Good Idea in Doornfontein, newly appointed, and he's still in a listening mode. And we'll be right back after this message.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is the Deep Dive. It's Brooke Spector. My guest today is Neo Muyanga at the Center for the Less Good Idea. He's in a listening mode now and thinking through what it is, the kinds of projects that are going to emanate during his tenure there as the creative director. I have a question, though, about your own creative efforts, because you have, over the years, you have been, what shall we say? You've done all kinds of things. You've been busy in your own creative work. Administration, managing a program, even if it is a creative cultivation of other people's work, means there's less time, only 24 hours in a day, even if you don't sleep, for you to do your own kinds of projects. Are you going to worry about the way this is going to limit you in your own thinking and own work?
Of course, a question that kind of niggles at the back of my head. The reality is I have tended to work as a curator in the past, and that process has also allowed me to investigate projects that then become my own interesting investigations that become stage productions. So what I'm doing in effect is bringing a set of ideas that I have personal interest in, and I have versions of them that I'm doing myself as creative work. Some of that I'll be doing at the center, incubating them there. So I become one of those artists who are incubating, but I will be incubating with a whole slew of people who are resourced by the center. So in fact, the center holds the possibility for bringing and inviting collaborators that I on my own couldn't carry. But I'm also interested in how other people who work in fundamentally different ways, seeing ideas that may align with mine, and to make a space for them and to partner with that project and to essentially walk with them, I feel is going to give me a new vantage point into what's coming around the corner. I'm interested in working with ideas that I haven't approached before. And so I want to find people who are working in different ways that I haven't worked in before. Also to just have references that broaden my scope. While I'm doing that, I invite a bunch of other people whose work I'm interested in to share the space in cross-referencing one another. Hopefully what that does is it inspires all of us to fail better. That's another way of saying, let's go.
Yeah, I mean, you're taking off from the name of the institution. Well, just as an aside, I had a conversation once with an actual venture capitalist in the U.S. and a man who managed the investments of large gouts of money to people who had hopefully great ideas that would turn into wonderful programs, projects, businesses, new industries. And he said, and I asked him, so how do you pick which thing to be interested in? He said, first of all, you have to understand, we never invest with anybody who hasn't already failed at something.
Oh, that's important to hear. That's great.
What do you mean? He said, because they've already learned how to build something and then watch it not work. And they've taken on board some lessons about how to make something successful by having failure.
And that's really important, I think, Brooks. And for me, one must always approach ideas ambitiously and not be afraid to fail. But of course, working at a high level where the failure is an opportunity to learn, as opposed to a moment where you force yourself into humiliated corners. It's about finding ways of constantly reaching further than you think you can go. It's about biting off more than you can chew, and then making a way that you carry that possibility with others. So it's not always premised on whether my ideas on my own can be genial. It's about how those ideas can be refreshed. They can be recalibrated. They can be repurposed by people who know different things to what I do, and how together we can find a way of making those ideas huge, magnificent discoveries. We're not aiming to make them perfect, but we're aiming to make them with rigor, and we're aiming to make them robust. I think those are, for me, the important, hit points to aim for.
I would think you also want to look for people and their projects and ideas whose egos are not so big that they cannot take on board criticism, other people's ideas, suggestions, critiques, even if they're blistering, because it really is very hard to be totally in isolation, locked in your room and saying, I have created a masterpiece. What, you don't like it?
Yeah, I don't think that's ever possible. I don't remember any moment in history where a genius came up with something purely on their own by just solitary contemplation. And that becomes something that sustains into a future that is the changing world. I believe very much in collaboration. And I think that demands a certain level of humility. It demands a certain sense of self. So it's also about confidence, but humility and confidence together become the two necessities in working collaboratively. And being open to criticism is a very key principle at the center. It's also a key principle for how I work. The commitment we have communicate criticism in a kind, respectful way. So to never attack people, never to belittle. But it's coming from a space of wanting us all to do better. But the critical eye is very important. So in fact, I was part of season 10, which was the most recent production that was presented to the public at the center. And throughout the process of making, we had sessions where all of the artists involved would watch each other's work. And then there'd be a moment given for feedback from the floor. And that feedback was often positive, but not always. And our commitment was to be open to those reflections and to try and integrate them into what we took into the following day of making and rehearsing and experimenting. For me, those are very important principles to have for a project like this.
We're going to have to take one more ad break. We're speaking with Neo Muyanga of the Center for the Less Good Idea, where he's creative director. As I've said to him, I visualize him riding around on his unicycle, trying to encourage all manner of artists and creators to come up with things that haven't been seen on the stages before. And we'll be back in just a minute. This is Brooke Spector with The Deep Dive.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, as we always are here on Friday mornings. And our guest this morning is Neo Muyanga of the Center for the Less Good Idea in Doornfontein, downtown, a project that was originally and I guess still creatively funded and guided from the outside. William Kentridge, local artist with global recognition, and colleague Bronwyn Lace. And Neo has joined the staff recently, where he is busy trying to create, to craft, to encourage, to nudge, to challenge other creative people. We were talking about the kind of work he's going to elicit from people on the recreation, the rebuilding, the reimagining of the African city, of which Johannesburg obviously is one. And I had asked him whether or not this would tend to limit his own creative activities. And he says, no, if I understand what he was telling me, it in many ways will enhance his work, because much of his own work has come about from a work with with groups of people to find the path for the work. Let me turn the question a different way. And put it in a broader context. You're talking about South Africa's contemporary culture. We're not going to be staging new productions of Aida or La Boheme, presumably, although you might reconstruct them in some strange and astonishing kind of way. And I will be delighted to see something like that because I love that kind of thing. You take something that's well known and take it apart and put it back together again in a very different kind of way. But what is South Africa's contemporary culture? How would you define what we have in front of us and who's in charge of it?
Look, I think that's a very interesting and difficult question to answer. What South African culture is probably is different to many of us who are invested in its creative life. I, for one, regard South African culture as really demonstrating hybridity, flexibility. And I think that comes from our history. We've got very strong indigenous traditions, ways of making, ways of musicking. And I'm speaking here specifically about music because that's what I make, music theater. And I think what we've discovered with that is those indigenous ways of making remain somewhat intact. And then there are ways that we assimilated from the colonial imposition. And some of those, like the practice of choral music and how that interfaces with opera, for example, are very important voices in South Africa today. So the idea of the four-part harmony chorus, the soprano, the alto, the tenor, and the bass, has become a very foundational way we hear voices, which is why choirs like Imilonji Gantu, or even if you go to the other side, groups like Ladysmith Black Mambazo have the kinds of mbube harmonies that they're making. These are all hybrid forms because we're taking from different perspectives. We're taking from indigenous practice and we're also taking from what becomes necessary from the global perspective. There's a new thing happening, which is the cutting edge way that South Africa is making a new name for itself in the electronic sphere, electronic music scene. And I'm thinking here both about new music and I'm thinking about phenomena like Amapiano, but you can go back even to Kwaito and Gqom and how that has become a way that the world understands what's happening in South Africa. And it gives voice to the way people move, to the way people dress, to the kinds of venues people want to be seen and associated with. And I think all of that is interesting and all of that is available for referencing and repurposing. I'm very interested in the idea you mentioned, which is to take what exists, to pull it apart and to put it back together in different ways. So an interesting way to do that might be how to make a commentary on Amapiano, but actually using a piano and a vocal ensemble or a string quartet. That becomes an interesting idea if you put it together with images. One of the series that I want to bring out into effect next year is a series of silent films. I want to take old colonial films and get new edgy composers to write scores live before an audience without having seen the film before. So it involves an element of risk, but it's about listening visually to what's happening. And of course, that will proceed towards inviting young filmmakers, not young in age, but young in the tradition of filmmaking to make their own, exactly, to make their own silent films that will be remodeled, repurposed, re-sonified by people who are live at the scene. So I'm interested in ideas that bring together people making things live together that involve some risk and experimentation, but they reference something that exists that is accessible already to an audience. And the audience is invited to not only marvel at the magic, but also to support it, to echo and to be part of the creative expression. So the audience becomes part of the foil that allows the performers to really go towards the edge of their own talent and what's known.
In your thinking about this, and I like what you've said, and I look forward to seeing some of these, whether they work well or whether they work less well. I mean, so the Center for the Less Well-Worked idea, maybe. Are there plans to take them beyond the physical building that you have? Because the country is big and there are major urban centers in various places, and just Johannesburg itself, it's a big space, whether it's in traditionally townships, or whether it's in older suburban areas, or whether it's the East or West Rand further afield. How do you see that? Is that a possible, or is that something that's one step too far right now?
No, it's absolutely possible. In fact, this is something that I'm broaching with an incredible artist and choreographer by the name of Sillo Pesa. And Sillo, his partner and collaborator artistically, Humphrey, have been pursuing a project on the streets of Maboneng, that new Doornfontein space, who work in the sector of garbage collection. But these are also people who come from societies that have songs, that have dances, that have dress modes. And so they are working with them on the idea of procession, street procession. So it's about how you can start to infiltrate and exist outside of the center physically, but have the center be present in what's happening at street level. And that's about investing in a group of people over the long term. So that project has been unfolding since before my time. I want to find ways of supporting it and resourcing it in a new way, and then to connect it to the other channels that I've been talking about, the adjacent neighbors, possibly towards Constitution Hill, and then to see what we can do about having a conversation on the streets of Johannesburg from east to the western side about how to make art visible, how to make art present, palpable on the streets during the daytimes, in the mornings, as well as in the evenings. And that becomes for me a way of expanding. But the other premise the center has is artists who are invited to incubate work there retain ownership of that work. And whatever ideas proceed from it, they can take and they can make grander, and they can take on other partners elsewhere, in the city, in the country, perhaps in the world. Because the place itself, the Center for the Less Good Idea, offers a space to think through the beginnings of an idea and to make it ready to approach an audience. But it's about how that artist can then take responsibility for that product and to take it out into the world. So we encourage people who are invited to think with us, to think about the longevity of the project, which we as a center may or may not be involved in.
The project presumably will hatch and move forward, you know, to come up with a really bad metaphor, the egg will hatch, and then the product will begin to move, and eventually it will fly away, like all those hadidas that you've been hearing in the background. They've suddenly taken up residence in my garden. You could use that ambient sound, I guess, to work it into something, you know, sounds
like Johannesburg.
And we've had airplanes fly overhead as well this morning, which is quite extraordinary for us. I have to take another quick station ID, and we'll be right back with Neo Muyanga of the Center for the Less Good Idea. And I'm Brooke Spector at the Deep Dive here, and we'll be right back.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And we are back in our program, The Deep Dive. We have a few minutes to wind up, and we've been speaking with Neo Muyanga, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector, on The Deep Dive. And in our last couple of minutes, let me ask you this question. Anybody who's lived in Johannesburg for years and years, and anybody who's visited the place, and anybody who has memories of an earlier Johannesburg, tends to think of the city in its final moments of just before all the bricks have collapsed and everything has given up and the electricity has gone away and there's no more water, and we have this vision of people picking over the ruins before they move on to another place. Do you see hope? Is there something to look forward to?
You know, that's an interesting question, which has been present for me certainly over the last 3 days, because I've been participating in a conference about tragedy. And a lot of the discussion, particularly yesterday, was about could we have hope inside of the tragic scenario? And lots of expressions that say yes, But that hope is obviously not a religious hope necessarily. So it's not about miracles happening. It's hope that that comes from making a commitment to do our part, to take some level of responsibility for our own sphere and the things we can do, and to do them in a consistent way, and to do them in collaborative ways. And that itself is a posture of hope, because it believes, well, it manifests this idea that tomorrow will be another day to work towards still existing, still surviving, still being better, we hope. So I think there is a hope, but it's a hope that is mitigated by a sense of what is realistic, what is possible on a daily perspective for each of us. And it's about each of us committing to doing the daily work, you know?
One of the things we haven't done in this conversation is we haven't actually described how you get there to the Center for the Less Good Idea. Please, can you just, for audience members who are scratching their heads trying to figure out where in the world this place is, please explain it.
Well, it's very easy to find. I've been using Uber, for example. You punch in the Center for the Less Good Idea, and it comes up, the address is on Fox Street. So you have to go through either the Joe Slovo channel from the side of Houghton, for example, or you can come from the M2 side, get down into Albertina Sisulu, and then turn into Fox Street from there. But there are lots of other ways to get in. And that's the way I drive in when I do drive as well. If you're on the side of Observatory, or you're on the side of Cyril Dean, or the side that's coming from the airport, then it's again a straight shot from that side of the eastern part of the city through Albertina Sisulu into that area. I think it's quite easy to get to. I think people have fear about approaching downtown Johannesburg. And so I think one of the ways that I've seen people do it is to go in packs. We had for season 10, invited a lot of international guests who were all coming in on a minibus, for example, or they shared Uber. That's one easy way of coming in. And the Uber drops you off at the door, and the Uber picks you up from the door. But I think it's important not to fear the city. I mean, the city is made up of people like us. And the city becomes safer if more people like us are on the streets, not less. The city is not going to be safe because of people touting guns and weapons. The city is going to be safe when we are taking it over culturally and making things available for multiple generations and at every time of the day. I know that's easy to say for those of us who are invested in the process, but in fact, it is achievable. You know, I've also spent time living in New York City, for example, and there was a time in the 1980s and the 1990s where people were saying places like Crown Heights in Brooklyn were no-go zones. I was recently doing some work out there, and it's become the most incredibly safe, culturally rich environment to experience. And it can happen, but it's about not believing it'll happen magically. It's about making it happen through the efforts that we as individuals can make. I go back to the story of the gentleman who transformed what we consider the Wilds Park. It's about individuals who decide they want to contribute to it being safer, and then that becomes the reality.
And if you and I try to go to Crown Heights and buy an apartment or a house, we can't afford it now.
Absolutely. I'll forget the idea.
Not available. We've run out of time, unfortunately, but we do want to thank you, Neo Muyanga, Center for Less Good Idea. Wonderful conversation about what is and what can be. This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector. Please, what is the website for the center so that people can look at the programming and look at the address and all the rest of that stuff?
It's the Center for the Less Good Idea.org. Literally, all those words.
That's pretty straightforward, pretty simple. We will take a look at that as well, and we'll pay attention to it. Again, thank you, and I hope to see you down there.
I look forward.
And as we check on your programming for the new year, we will come your way. This has been Brooke Spector with The Deep Dive, and we'll be back again next week with another interesting, informative, challenging guest from the arts or international relations or political science or futurology or almost anything goes as long as it's going to be an interesting conversation. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much, Brooks.